pediatric pneumonia, placebo use, and a look at acid-base balance. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's the Nursing Show. Hi, I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'm here with episode one of The Nursing Show, a show for nurses, nursing students, and anybody else interested in the medical field and what nursing has to offer. This week's episode, I'm going to be looking at a bit of news as well as looking at acid-base balance. We'll do a review, we'll start at the beginning, and in future episodes, we'll plow right on through acid-base balance till we all have a good handle on what acid-base balance means for our patients. First, though, let's take a little look at the Nursing Show. You can head on over to nursingshow.com, and you'll find all the information, links to everything I talk about in this episode and future episodes, all linked to over there at thenursingshow.com in the show notes. You can also contact me directly with your own questions, your own comments, and your own link information so that we can supply that information back to the Nursing Show community. And you can do that by reaching me at comment@nursingshow.com. Just send your comments in and we will get them up here for everyone else to share. Don't be shy. The Nursing Show is a community effort. A little bit about me. Well, for about the last 2 years, I've been producing a very successful and highly acclaimed show about EMS providers, EMTs, paramedics, nurses as well in the field that deal with emergency medical services. It's called the Medic Cast, and you can find that over at mediccast.com. And due to a lot of requests from some of my listeners over there that are nurses or nursing students, I thought it might be appropriate to change the focus a little bit and start a new program about nursing. So this is the Nursing Show, a show about nurses, for nurses, by nurses. And it is my hope that we can share the information, little tips and tricks, things that we do to improve the patient care process and improve our own process, make us better nurses in the field. And whether that field is outside of the hospital, in the hospital, in a doctor's office, in a home care environment, all of these places require good, skilled nursing care. And that's what it's all about, folks, is providing the care that patients need when they need it and doing it in a compassionate and caring way. So that's my goal here, is to hook everybody up with some of the other nursing viewpoints that are out there. So look forward to future episodes where I will be featuring interviews with nurses from many of the nursing specialties so that we can all get a handle on what we're doing out there in the different areas of nursing, from education to home care nursing to public health. Nurse anesthetist, you name it, we'll have something about it here eventually on The Nursing Show. So you want to stay subscribed to both the show and to the blog at the website so that you can be kept updated on what's going on. The first item I'm going to look at in the news for this episode has to do with the treatment of pediatric pneumonia and a study that looked at whether treating severe pneumonia in pediatric patients at home with oral antibiotics was as effective as treating them in the hospital setting with IV antibiotics. And this is a big issue because pneumonia is one of the world's leading killers of children, particularly in third world areas like South Asia or sub-Saharan Africa. And the researchers were looking to find out if there was decent effectiveness with oral antibiotics that may change the way that these children are treated when this disease presents. Currently, the World Health Organization has guidelines advising for the treatment of children with moderate pneumonia or less to be treated with oral antibiotics in the home setting. Very cost-effective and very easy for people that do not have a hospital close by. They have also advocated the treatment of severe pneumonia in their guidelines by getting the patient to a hospital setting and initiating IV antibiotic therapy. However, in many parts of the world, reaching a hospital is just not an option. And so researchers were looking at the effectiveness of alternative therapies, including a longer course of home-based antibiotics. And that's exactly what this study looked at. They wanted to deal with the more than 2 million children under the age of 5 who die every year from pneumonia. And that's one-fifth of the number of children who die every year from other disease causes. Higher than malaria, higher than HIV, pneumonia is a serious problem. And so this is an important study that looked at the effectiveness of a 14-day course of oral antibiotics in the home. And what the study found was that oral antibiotic treatment in the home was as effective as treatment with IV antibiotics in the hospital. And this is going to be a big step to treating this type of problem in the field, because oral antibiotics are less expensive, and of course, home treatment is always cheaper than hospital treatment. So you can find a link to this story in the show notes. I think it's good reading, and it's always important to be up on what's going on in world health and know what treatment options are available in other places. The next item in the news comes from a study that was put out from the University of Chicago by a medical student, and it was published in the Journal of General Internal Medicine, and it has to deal with placebo use by doctors for their patients. And a surprising survey sent out by this medical student to 466 internists in 3 Chicago area medical centers found that about half, or 45% of them, said they had used a placebo during their clinical practice at some point. And this raises interesting ethical questions and really causes some consternation, I'll bet, for the nurses that work for these doctors if they have prescribed a placebo to a patient. What do you do when that patient calls back with a report of an apparent side effect because they want to know if this is something that they should expect from the medication they're taking? What do you say? How do you deal with that when you know the physician is trying to trick them into getting better, if that's an appropriate way to say this? It's interesting also in how the doctors spoke about the medication when they prescribed it. 34% of them used words like, "This may help and will not hurt you," while others said, "This may help you, but I'm not sure how it works," which would bother me if my doctor said that to me. And about 19% of it just called it a medication. And of course, the problem with all of these statements is that it calls into question the concept of informed consent. Now, clearly, prescribing a placebo to a patient is not going to cause them harm, but we are prescribing them something that they think is going to help them, that clearly has no medical benefit, at least in a drug aspect, and seems more likely to be a treatment for the physician rather than the patient. Maybe a way to get that patient who chronically calls and comes in with a series of nonspecific symptoms with no apparent disease process underlying it, we may be inclined to want to shuffle them off in some way. And this may not be an appropriate way to do that, at least ethically. One possible solution offered by the researchers in this survey would be to provide the patient up front during their initial consultation in whatever practice they're coming to for their problem to give them informed consent up front. Have them sign a paper that says you may be prescribed a placebo at some point in order to more effectively treat whatever your presentation is. The patient signs that, then they go ahead and they have provided the informed consent ahead of time to let the doctor be a little more creative with their treatment. In any case, it is something that you need to be aware of in the nursing field, because you may be providing information on placebo administration and the side effects associated with it. I don't know. You think black tarry stools are included in the placebo side effect profile? We'll have to find out. It seems like they fall into everything else. Okay, I'll wrap up the news today with a look at a research study where the researchers didn't find what they were hoping to find. It didn't answer the question in the way that they were expecting, but it did answer some other questions and provide some other positive outcome. And I think that's one of the reasons that we need to continue working on our research projects on whatever the topic might be, because you never know what you're going to find out when you come to the other side of the process. This study comes out of Philadelphia, and the Pennsylvania study looked at relationships between exercise and menopause symptoms. This study specifically looked at the relationship between exercise and hot flashes in women who were experiencing menopause. And during the process of the study, they found that, unfortunately, there was no relationship between physical activity and hot flashes. But they did find that exercise lowered patients' perceived stress. They had a decreased level of anxiety, stress, and depression when they were exercising when compared to women who were postmenopausal in other areas of low physical activity. And this is something that probably shouldn't surprise any of us. I think the relationship between physical activity and positive mental attitude and dealing with stress and other problems in people's lives, including depression, seems to have a very positive outlook. The body likes to be healthy. If you look at the whole person, if you look at the way that everything affects everything else in a person's life, you know that anything that improves overall body health improves overall body ability to deal with stressors, whether they would be stressors from psychological issues, stressors from outside the body, and of course, stressors from within as well. So while exercise doesn't take care of hot flashes, it may help alleviate some of the stress experienced during hot flashes. And yet another reason to encourage our patients and ourselves to go out and get a little bit more exercise throughout the course of our week. I'd let that soothing interlude music kind of play out a little bit as we head on into a topic that gives a lot of people a great deal of stress. And since you're listening to this, maybe while you're exercising, you're working on that stress anyway. But this is an important topic, and it's something we need to have a good handle on. If you're a nursing student, you're probably pulled your hair out over it. If you've been a nurse for a long time, maybe it's something you haven't revisited in a while. And I'm talking about acid-base balance. I know, it strikes fear in everyone's heart. Well, there's a few basic concepts lying behind acid-base balance, and I think, at least for myself, when I do some of my educational work with EMTs and paramedics in my other side of my medical career, I find that acid-base balance, once you get those few key concepts under your belt, tends to be not that hard. And so we're going to start off here with an intro to acid-base balance, and then in future episodes, I'll come back and revisit some of those other parts, and we'll put it all together into a whole and look at acid-base balance and some of the things in the nursing field, at least, that we need to be aware of. So to start off with, I'm going to look at pH. What does pH mean? How is it defined? And what does that have to do with how the body operates? So we'll do a quick look at pH today, and then we'll touch on some of the other concepts lying behind it, acid-base balance in the future. The reason pH gives people a hard time is that it is an inverse logarithmic function. That means that it goes in the opposite direction you expect it to. And if you can keep that one key concept in your brain, you will have a head start to getting a handle on pH and the numbers behind acid-base balance. pH is a scale that goes from 0 to 14, 0 being extremely acidic and 14 being extremely alkalotic. In the middle is 7. 7 is normal as far as pH is concerned. However, it's not normal for the body. The body's normal plasma pH level should fall somewhere between 7.35 and 7.45 on that scale. Anything below 6.8 is going to be outside of the realm of human life, and anything above 7.8, consequently also, would be unviable as a blood pH level. So you get outside of those normal ranges, and you start being either acidic or alkalotic. Maybe if I draw a picture for you, it'll be a little bit easier. Okay, I can't draw a picture for you, but I can tell you how to draw the picture for yourself. Now, of course, if you're driving, you want to keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Play this back when you get back to your room or back home or wherever it is you're going. Get a piece of paper and then draw the picture I'm going to tell you how to draw. First off, I want you to start in the middle of the paper, draw a triangle with the point pointing up, okay? Then you're going to create a seesaw on top of that triangle. Just draw a straight line across it with the triangle in the middle, the top of the bar resting on the top of the triangle. Now we're going to label the two sides of this seesaw. We're going to draw vertical lines just off to the side on either side of the seesaw. And in the middle, we're going to label on the left-hand side 7. And then at the bottom of that left-hand side's vertical line, you're going to put 0, and at the top, you're going to put 14. On the right-hand side, you'll have a similar vertical line, and at the top of that vertical line, you're going to write acidosis. In the middle, you'll write normal, and at the bottom, you'll write alkalosis. Now, right away, you should be able to see how this inverse relationship is easily represented by this particular drawing or diagram. Because if you push the seesaw up or down from either side, it will point at the value that you would be looking for the corresponding value on that side. So, for instance, if I were to start tipping the seesaw down below 7 towards the numbers, let's say number 3, if we were to continue to create that scale, at the other side of that seesaw, it's now pointing up towards acidosis. This is how you can remember that acidosis is going to indicate a lower pH. Consequently, if you were to push the bar down towards alkalosis, then you would look on the other side, on the left-hand side, and you would see numbers higher than 7, or the higher pH numbers, and higher pH is an indication of alkalosis. So this is a quick and easy way for you to remember pH and how it works. And then you're just going to have to memorize the numbers 7.35 and 7.45 as the normal ranges for a person in homeostasis with acid-base balance, the normal plasma pH. And anything outside of those values would be an indication of either lower numbers indicating acidosis, higher numbers indicating alkalosis. Again, to remind you, the extreme outside numbers for human life, the viability numbers that are out there, and you may see slightly different numbers in different textbooks, but some of the numbers I've found seem to indicate 6.8 on the low end and 7.8 on the high end as the outside ranges for viability in human life. And so that's a quick overview of pH and how the numbers relate to acidosis and alkalosis. We'll check back in a future episode and look at some of the other aspects of acidosis, alkalosis, and acid-base balance. That's going to wrap up this episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to check it out. I hope the information was useful for you. Make sure you check back over at The Nursing Show website at nursingshow.com. And I will have all of the links in the show notes for this episode so you can check out the news stories or the research for yourself. And you'll have an opportunity also to check out all of the other information I post up there throughout the week. Anytime I find a news item or a story I think you might be interested in, I'll be posting it there over at the Nursing Show blog. So you want to make sure you check back often. I'll be back soon with another episode of The Nursing Show. And until I do, I want to leave you with some great PodSafe music. Music by an artist who has offered their songs up here for podcasters like me. And today's episode is going to include a song by a good friend of mine, Johanna Staley. Johanna's been a supporter of PodSafe music for a long time and a supporter of my other main show, The Medic Cast. And I thought you would appreciate her music as well. So here's Johanna Staley's song, I'm Not Perfect. If you like what you hear, you can head over to Johanna's website, let her know you heard her song here on The Nursing Show. And if you're interested, there's a link there. You can go directly to iTunes and purchase that music as well. Until the next episode, make sure all of you stay safe. I'll be back again soon.